truthfully, what happens is, as children grow up, we start to educate them progressively from the waist up. And then we focus on their heads, and slightly to one side.
I think in the old days, you know, you were better off. Because nowadays, they're all specialists. Everyone's becoming better and better, and less and less. And eventually, someone's going to be superb at nothing.
Our education system has mined our minds in the way that we've strip-mined the earth for a particular commodity. And for the future, it won't serve us. We have to rethink the fundamental principles on which we're educating our children.
We're not here to tell everybody that they're wrong and we're right. We're not saying that we have all the answers, but we'd like to present a different way of looking at it.
So, Adam, make a space. But what's this breaker space?
that's just one component of in the makerspace where kids can they get an old toy or something, TV, and they can just take it apart, and there's actually a formula for it where they can recreate something else from that material that they've taken apart. So it ties in with the recycle, the reuse, and sometimes kids just like to take a hammer and bust into something and see what's inside it, which is totally acceptable.
Totally, absolutely fine. It's that movie scene where you get the TV set out on in the yard and you get the golf club out.
And just start whacking away on it, yeah. No, amazing, just having kids hold a hammer. Some kids have never held a hammer before, so it's great to see.
We've got
to
be careful with hammers.
Well, yeah, I'm good at dodging them now.
I remember Zach, my oldest kid, and it all fills into this. I'm connecting it now. So there's something that's broken, the DVD player or something, and I gave it to him and I said, chuck it out, put it in the bin.
Yeah.
He goes, no, Dad. I said, what do you mean that? I said, we can break it. I said, what do you mean break it? Like break a space. We can tear it open and have a look at it. And I was like, absolutely wonderful. Let's do it.
That's awesome.
But be very careful with those because you can really slice your hands on these metal, you know, when you when you're whacking things.
Yeah,
you know? Just have to put that disclaimer out.
Yeah, there's always a possibility of getting hurt, but yeah, you just got to be careful.
Recycle. Reuse, and if anyone can remember the third R, it's just ridiculous. There's something wrong.
The fact you can't both remember it.
That we can't. There's obviously effort. It's not working. Yeah. No. So three R's.
People just say recycle now.
Off you go.
Reduce. I just thought of it. Genius.
Make a space, God. Okay. So good. We've got recycle, reuse, and reduce.
Reduce. Yeah.
Or maybe recycle, reduce, recycle, and whatever. They all work. But we're talking about makerspace. And this wonderful movement that's spreading. And over the last few years, you've established the first makerspace, I would say, for QSI. Am I right? The organization you work for?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Shenzhen, I think, had one. Maybe. I'm not sure.
Okay.
But ours is better.
What's happened to that one in Shenzhen, then?
It's still there.
Yeah. Tumbling along.
Yeah.
Okay, this will be a good segue in later for that. You mentioned in the last pod where we started to introduce to our listeners what Makerspace was, what it's all about. There were three very distinct phases in launching and evolving a Makerspace in a school.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I did.
Can you just start with that? Because you mentioned the first one, so let's mention it again.
Okay, so the first one was the exploratory phase, and that's where we just got everybody into the Makerspace and just checking out all the tools and having fun playing with it and figuring out where things go. Basically.
Okay.
Okay. So.
And that lasts for.
That was the year, the first year.
The first year.
Yeah. So and the first year. This is our second year now. So.
You're in the second year. In the first year, the teachers are bringing in maybe one, two periods a week.
Yeah, and then they could sign up for more, which a lot of them did. So it's open to use any class period. So the makerspace is open from morning till we leave school. So period, some teachers would just, you know, they liked it. They wanted to come in more and check it out. So they would sign in. And I would always offer, you know, extra help or just be in there to show them where things are at. So.
And these exploratory things was looking at the areas, the tools, what was available in there?
Yeah, it just happened kind of organically. So, like, if I chose it, I'd take a, for example, we have these little plastic screws called Make-Dos. Really cool. It's M-A-K-E-D-O, if you haven't heard about them. But
okay.
You just screw them into cardboard.
Makedo.
And you can basically build a house with these little plastic screws, or build a toy car or something like that out of cardboard. So all you need is these screws and cardboard. So I would, you know, just grab that off the shelf and grab a bunch of cardboard and some different, you know, cutters and say, okay, kids, this is what we're doing today. But just the fact that they would, now they know how to use that kit, what it does, they know how to cut, they know where the cardboard's stored, and then they know how to clean up afterwards where things go, you know, pencils and pens. And so just many projects like that basically throughout the year, just grabbing different things.
I mean, you mentioned, let's call them exploratory projects because that's the phase we're in. You've got these cardboard connectors. You can start making things with cardboard structures, 3D structures. You got the slime you were doing.
That's always the first one because kids love slimes.
Okay. But where did these ideas come from? Because I know you're a very creative guy.
No, I'm not a genius when it comes to coming up with all these ideas. But there's so many places online now where people are posting their great ideas. And you know, actually, believe it or not, like Pinterest has amazing makerspace stuff. If you go on Pinterest or... you start typing in makerspace for education and a bunch of ideas come up. And I mean, literally, you can just get overwhelmed with so many ideas out there. So you just start picking a couple of them. And you know, like, it's hard in China, but if you're on Twitter, you can start subscribing to a lot of these these education sites. And the, like, Smithsonian makerspace start posts activities almost every day on there. So I just start tagging some of these things. And you know, I have a wish list of, oh, here's what I want to do today. And sometimes I categorize them by activity. And so I can just go to a folder and pull up an idea and say, oh, we're going to do that today. So
that's a good idea.
Yeah, and if the teachers come to me and say, hey, I want to do this specific teaching, you know, I want to try to cover this in my teaching, then I can just go to my folder and say, oh, I have an idea for that.
So you mentioned you're organically growing it. You're also research from the teachers, what they were kind of wanting to explore a bit. Sure. But in the beginning, you'd also done a thorough research, a good 3 months, mm-hmm. And you got on board good exploratory first things to do.
Yes.
So then you basically see those and you go to your director and you say, right, this is what we need to order, and you'd order it in.
Yeah. There's a whole process in behind the scenes of ordering and supplying and organizing. I'm not going to bore everybody with that, but yeah, we're lucky in China as things do cost a lot less for materials with Taobao and various other sites.
Taobao.
Yes, Miss Taobao. But you can, like I said, it's amazing how much stuff you can find in the school already.
Yes.
Once people reuse. Are bored with makerspace, they're willing to part with it out of their classroom.
Oh yes.
A lot of teachers are very hoarding. Like, you know, I've got all this stuff, I don't want to lose it, you know, I don't want to give it to, but then they start going, oh, okay, well, I see that it's going to, you know, everybody's going to be able to do this. And so they start pitching in. I found so much stuff in storage that people just weren't using. And then now they're using it miraculously because it's in the makerspace. I've gotten so many parent donations just by asking.
Which, oh, whoa.
I think that's a big part because I've talked about makerspaces to a lot of people now and some schools. And my big pitch is just ask people. It's amazing what happens when you ask parents that are involved in all these really, you know, dynamic industries within the international field for supplies or things around the house. You know, we had a parent that worked for Brother Sewing Company,
yeah.
And he donated, we went and toured his facility, and at the end he donated 2 brand new, really nice commercial grade sewing machines to us.
Wonderful.
Label makers from Brother. And so that was just one example, and I have a handful of those examples. And recently we started this kitchen space, and I've had a huge outpouring from parents. A parent bought us a brand new oven and had it delivered to the school. And so I had boxes of, you know, leftover kitchen utensils and pots and pans and stuff that just people weren't using. So, and I mean, none of that stuff I had to pay for. It was just all given to us just because I sent out a text message saying, here's what we're going to start doing.
Yeah.
So it's amazing. They're different. You can really work with what your restrictions are, you can overcome them quite easily.
By using your community.
Yeah. And you know, the basis of makerspace isn't the stuff that's in it so much as you know, you do need things, but what you can do with limited supplies is quite amazing. I mean, you know, like I say, puffy balls and popsicle sticks, you can do,
yeah.
I can come up with 30 activities for just those things. So
I mean, even chopsticks. Yeah. Or toothpicks and blue tack.
Yeah,
sometimes what you can do with that.
Just put those in front of kids and ask them to build a tower and see what happens. You'd be amazed. So
yeah,
you don't need things are helpful, but you don't need those as the essence of your makerspace.
As we're in the exploratory phase, starting up first year, What would you say would be the very basic stuff that you'd need to get one going, Adam? Are you going to say, right, you need to buy a 3D printer? Are you going to say, right, we need to buy a saw, and we need to buy pliers, and we need da-da-da-da-da-da-da?
I have a formula, and I have a list, a spreadsheet that I've put together over the 2 years, and it has basics, must-haves, want-to-have, and wish-list items. So I've categorized all these different categories, like of electronics and tools. And, you know, in the basics for tools, you know, not to go bore you with too many details, but you have things like screwdrivers and hammers. And then for the art supplies, you have things like popsicle sticks and toothpicks.
Right.
And it just grows from there. And so that's usually when QSI schools have been asking me recently, like, where do we start with this? Mm. I just hand them that list and say, you know, just go through this list. And if you want to add stuff to it, great, because a lot of teachers and schools have great ideas, and I'd like to hear what they're doing. But it's a basis to start with that I've created, and so that's kind of my go-to. And then depending on your budget restrictions, you can kind of go from there. So some schools I've had some schools contact me who have a very small budget, small student population, and they're looking at, you know, just the real basics, popsicle sticks and tools and hammers. And then I have schools that have huge budgets, like, you know, they can afford laser cutters and 3D printers and all that stuff, and stuff that I would dream of right now. But we're doing pretty good. But so it just depends on what fits your school. So.
Okay, understand. I mean, talking about budget,
yeah,
don't like to really, but
yeah,
I guess we'll talk about it at some point. Money-wise, mm-hmm. Give us an eco budget for starting out. I know we're in China and things are a bit cheaper.
Yeah,
it's an eco hard, budget, but for getting that first startup, first 3-4 months, exploratory phase.
Yeah, I mean, you can do quite a bit, I feel like, with the equivalent of US dollar would be $5,000. I mean, I think we had about $10,000 into ours. And that, again, that was buying almost a lot of the wish list items I wanted. But again, we are in China, so things are cheaper. So it just depends, but I mean, again, it just depends on what kind of makerspace you're willing
and
to
want
to set up,
how many kids, and how
much parents are donating, and how much the school already has. I mean, a place like where I was from, Almaty, would have a huge, much larger budget than even we would. So it really, there's so many different, reasons why your budget would change. But I would say, for the most part, you know, on a $5,000 budget, you could start a pretty good makerspace.
Okay, good stuff. So we've gone past the exploratory phase. You've done the year. You've got the basic materials. You've started exploring with the teachers. They're bringing their kids in once, twice a week, getting to know what's there, doing basic kind of stuff, just exploring what's possible.
Yeah.
Then what comes next after the second year?
Yeah, so the second year is where we're at right now. That's called the cross-curricular phase, or whatever you want to call it.
Well, is that your terminology?
I've kind of borrowed some of these terms, yeah, and things, and kind of mixed them, and you know, there's not really a set, you know, guidelines for makerspace.
Cross-curricular phase.
And I mean, that's kind of a term that a lot of teachers use, and basically that just means that you're bringing in your teaching into the makerspace. So, you know, I want to teach. For example, I'm using recently I teach U.S. history. We're studying the 1960s. That's our unit.
Okay.
And so I would say, okay, now we're going to do a 1960s project in the makerspace, which my kids are making, kind of these interactive posters where you touch them and the characters talk to you, like through a computer. So it's just all this body kind of conductivity and wiring things up. And so basically I'm melding makerspace with U.S. history right now. So that's cross-curricular. And you can apply that to every grade level and every class. I mean, it doesn't matter whether it's English or science or math or even PE or music or drama. You can do any of those in that kind of second year. And that's it is more difficult because that's more teacher-driven. I can give ideas, but this year has actually been more successful than I thought because teachers were so comfortable that they felt kind of empowered to go in there by themselves and start doing these activities that I think they wanted to, but like you said before, maybe they never had the supplies or anything.
Yeah.
I mean, I saw a teacher the other day making a mummy, a museum of Egypt, so they were building little clay figures and doing all those things. And so, I mean, I didn't give him that idea. He just, you know, said, I want to do this. I'm going to make it happen. And so This is the second year cross curricular. So that's the idea behind it.
Do all the teachers, because you were you established it?
Yes.
Do they come to you before they go in there? Like that teacher who went in there to do the Egyptian.
Sure. We just have a sign up sheet, so anybody can go in there at any time. I'm really just kind of like I'm not really involved so much with the teaching part this year because I'm just more of like if they have questions, they come to me, like consult me or whatever, I guess you could say, or bounce ideas off me, or mostly like, you know, hey, I need these supplies, could you try to find them? So I'm really hands off the second year, which is nice because it's kind of running itself. I don't really have to do much hands-on stuff with it.
Yeah.
So, but for the most part, if teachers want to use it, it's open. You just sign up online and you have that space for that 45 minutes.
So you're finding, Adam, after this year of the exploratory phase, now within this cross-curricular phase,
mm-hmm.
that teachers actually have the confidence. They don't really need to bounce ideas off you. They kind of know what it's about. They've explored
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
They're taking their research that they've done on their own and seeing how that fits into how they're teaching and how they can use the makerspace
yeah.
materials.
Yeah. And I think it's up to the teachers to kind of innovate and keep going with it. And we do some PDs and some trainings on some of the new stuff that's out there.
Right.
I mean, I think you could always spend more time on new stuff that's out there. There's so much out there right now. But it's gonna be mostly teacher driven to go out there and look for some of these new ideas and things that are happening. And I'll introduce if people ask me, I'll say, hey, check out this new, you know, coolest latest thing. Try it out and see how it goes.
Two things come to mind that I want to pick up now on this cross curricular phase.
Yeah.
One is stock.
Mm-hmm.
Keeping it going.
Yeah.
And also, are you involved in that now? I mean, when you first started, mm-hmm. I think you mentioned earlier you labeled everything and
sure,
things
yeah.
like that. Is that your job?
Yeah, I mean, I do have a period, a day dedicated pretty much to going down there and cleaning the makerspace up for, because I mean, you know, things need to be arranged or organized, and then I order once a week or twice a week, depending on how heavy it's being used. Right now, the school's doing a STEAM fair, and so it's insane down there. I mean, there's like four or five classes down there on that floor doing projects, and materials are getting used almost every day, so I have to be down there more heavily. But my involvement right now is one period a day. Which is important when you're setting up a makerspace is to think about staffing, is you've got to have somebody in that can take on that space.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, they have different requirements, but you need a point person, basically.
Okay.
Yeah, in your school, within your school environment.
And you are that point person.
I am, yeah, at least until June.
Right, well, we'll get to that. Now, if I'm a teacher and I've explored and I'm liking this whole thing and
yeah.
I'm thinking, yes, I finally can get all my stuff from under my desk that I want to just hold on to and I can put it in the makerspace and reuse it in another
yeah.
way for other people.
Yeah.
And also I can do this thing I want to do because I don't have to like go and order it and all this stuff because
yeah,
it's
yeah.
there.
Yeah.
How many classes can I have a week in the makerspace? Is there a max?
Yeah, we say two periods a week right
okay.
now in terms of like a lot of teachers want to do their technology. They have a dedicated teaching technology period.
Which used to be computers.
Which
should
be computers. And now the teachers have voluntarily said, we're going to do it in the makerspace now. And so they get two periods a week for that. Some of them want more. So if it's not conflicting with anybody else's schedule or anything, they can sign up for more. We haven't really restricted it too much. It's been a little difficult during some peak times because some teachers have wanted to get in there and they can't right now. But we've been sharing
yeah.
the spaces. So with Makerspace, it's amazing. I feel like, you know, we can literally take over the entire floor of our
I was going to say.
I mean,
yeah.
we have the outside areas in our little, if to picture it, we have a giant room.
Your building is like a flower in a way, isn't it?
It is,
you've got that middle bit.
It is, actually. And now they're using the inside of that flower and the hallways, and so it's kind of spilling out. And everybody's joking that, you know, when the school does decide to move to a new location, they will have to invest in kind of thinking about that area in particular, designing that area and heavily. So,
well, and so they should.
Yeah.
I think because
it's a highlight. It is a nice show off point for the school that look at all these things we're doing. You know, the tour, you immediately want to tour people through there because it is such a cool space. Like
yeah.
you know, prospective parents is like, wow, look at this is what we want. You know, for our kids. I mean, we want personally for our kids, and I hope that other parents do too. It's just such a great. You know, a great place for students. So,
thing is, like, as you start creating more,
yeah,
you create a lot more, I'm not going to say mess, but you create a lot more things that need to be put somewhere, don't you?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I've seen, because there's a couple of things, because I was teaching STEAM for the summer school that your school
yeah,
last
yeah,
year.
Yeah, you helped kind of unpack everything for me.
I helped unpack
it. In our second move.
Yes, yes. And my God, did,
we moved
you,
to a bigger location.
Did you have a lot of stuff?
in 1 year.
A couple of things. One is, what I noticed was, 45 minutes, that's your period, isn't it?
Yes.
Not long enough.
No,
for me, and because
yeah.
once you get the kids in,
yeah,
and they, you know, they wherever they've come from, and they get 5 minutes, they're into the zone.
Yeah.
Well, by the time they get the tools out and things like this, it's like, oh, the bell goes, or the other class is knocking on the door. How do you get around that? Because for me, a makerspace is a double period any time of the week.
A double period would be really nice.
Yeah, you agree for that? Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, you can always have more time. I think the key with projects is to train the students that, you know, like, you get better as the first time we do projects,
yeah.
it seems like 10 minutes to clean up. Then you can
yeah.
kind of cut that down time down to maybe 6 minutes. Then maybe, like, 3 minutes by the end. Or, you know, and you keep trying to kind of challenging them, like, hey, the faster we clean up, you know, the faster we do this or whatever. So I think they get in the zone. We have a new kind of, like, project storage area, which has helped. So they have little cubbies.
Right.
So they can immediately put their projects in there. And then they clean up. I mean, I've got it down, I think, to, like, the kids are literally cleaning up in, like, 3 minutes now. And that's including, like, mopping some floors and sweeping. And they
wow,
know.
3 minutes.
They know. They're, like, running around, like, chickens with their heads cut off and just putting things exactly back where they go. And, you know, I'm kind of shouting commands as we're going. It's kind of chaotic, but it happens really quick. And set up for them, for the most part, is pretty easy. But it depends on the teachers and how they're... You know, how they're introducing it to the kids. I mean, last week we started, I did do a cooking activity with my kids, and I spent one period just introducing them to the stuff we had available, but how to clean up,
yeah.
how to wash your dishes. And so I think that's key, is investing initially in the time to train kids, and then it pays off in the long run, like, tenfold. I mean, really, I think that some of the mistakes that happen are and their teachers feel overwhelmed is they never spend the time to slow down and teach their kids, like, you know, to this is how things are put away and this is how we do things, and then it's smooth sailing from there. So I think that's key. So 45 minutes for me seems plenty for a lot of projects, actually.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, these are ongoing projects.
Yeah,
there'll
they're
be
ongoing.
One phase of an ongoing project.
Yeah, or every other day. Sometimes we only have certain days in there, so they can only be there every other day. So.
I mean, we're sort of talking about the challenges of getting something like this movement off the ground as we go. It's naturally, as we're speaking, coming in.
Yeah.
And storage is a big one. I mean, now I've seen from when I was at your school last, at one of my son's things, it's now, because you've moved from that small, can only 5x5,
yeah.
can just about swing a cat,
yeah.
into now a three-phase, three-roomed
huge, yeah,
place.
Huge area, yeah, yeah.
But even that's actually now starting to get too small.
Isn't that crazy?
It's starting to splurge out.
Yeah, I mean, I've recently kind of gone through and purged a lot of things because it's easy to collect in Makerspace everything that exists in the world.
Yeah. Are you recycling in it? Or
oh,
you
we started a recycle center, which we did. Well, so that's good. So a lot of the items go into that recycle center, which
kicks back into the whole education of, you know, where materials.
Kids are just going down there and grabbing stuff they need for projects. So it's kind of all this, like, you know, this just what it just is all kind of combining into this really cool giant, you know, project. But yeah, we started kind of organizing that. The students have helped kind of do this kind of maybe once a month cleanup where we get rid of purge cardboard and stuff we don't use anymore. And I think the key is definitely staying organized, because it could easily get out of control. This week has been insane, and I think I'm going to have to, like, spend a couple weeks getting caught up from this week. But for the most part, I think that, just having space over these items is super important. And if you go there now, recently, I've gotten it pretty dialed in. It looks pretty good, actually. You'd be surprised, for everything has its spot and
yeah.
supplies. But yeah, you know, it's amazing. I keep joking, and everybody's joking with me. Like, you need an entire floor now, and we could use
yeah.
another floor. So, I mean, my biggest pitch when people are asking how to set up a makerspace is get the biggest space
yeah.
possible, because you'll regret it, and you'll end. It's going to be popular. You'll end up moving and doing twice as much work.
Adam,
yourself.
Say that again one more time.
Get the biggest space possible. Just fight for it, literally.
Yeah,
yeah.
Because
yeah.
it really is. I mean, it's in the name.
Yeah.
Makers space.
Yeah.
You're making
kids,
space.
Kids need space to create. They
yeah.
need floor space. They need table space.
and you need they need that. And so you have you can't be in a tiny room. I mean, I just recently took a trip to Dongguan and the
Dongguan, another Dongguan, city in China, the other QSR.
Yeah, other QSR.
New school now, yeah.
Yeah, and the director, Lisa Haberman, is really, really great lady. She said, oh, I was curious about starting a makerspace. Could you, how about this space? And it was this tiny, like, you know, little classroom, same as our previous makerspace. I said, there's no way you're gonna need a bigger space. And then we looked around the building and ended up finding something really big near her entrance that was a really a nice sized room that wasn't really being used to its potential. And so they're gonna go ahead with creating maker space there. But it was really great to see that she has that vision, kind of the same thing, and is kind of going through the same process that we went through, and just doing it, you know, just starting out in that journey. So it's really cool.
I just vision again, the flower, the petals around. When you're designing a school, I know we're not all lucky to design schools, but anyone out there now thinking of it,
yeah,
it's an interesting natural geometrical shape that, because you have the hub where your resources are, mm-hmm, in that middle of the flower, and then the petals are the different subjects. But I almost take it further in what I'm thinking now, Adam. A school, you go in and it's almost like factory is not the word. Showroom's not the word, but showroom factory, actually, and teaching areas, showroom factory, might actually be. So you go in and it's like an IKEA just coming into my mind. And what I'm saying is there's no defined that's for history, mm-hmm, or that's for maths. It just kind of, okay, now I'm thinking, well, how could that possibly work with human beings? But I think we're opening up into this kind of no more categorizing, no more space for this and that. It is starting to open up with STEAM, with this maker. It's just creating the space to make and learn through it.
I think we'll always have our classrooms and our specialty areas, but I think I'm hoping to kind of break down those boundaries where teachers aren't afraid to go to that centralized space and kind of take things outside the classroom. Mm. That's what it, you know, I mean, we still have to spend some time, you know, learning some of the core subjects and talking about them, and then taking that into another area or applying it, I guess, to say. So I envision still, like, in a perfect school, like you said, kind of these classrooms, but they have this centralized space that everybody can go and create that's rather large, and we're. I feel like at the QSIGU, I've been so lucky to have this freedom to do that, but I feel like we're pretty close to that right now. I mean, we are doing that. A lot of the teachers are doing that and going forward with that.
It's about how, I think I didn't say it the right way. It's about breaking boundaries between certain subjects and actually beliefs, I think, as well, with moving from education in the 1920s to now 2000. What are we in? 2019. Yeah. And it's about breaking down boundaries, and that classroom over there doesn't necessarily have to have four walls. That's what I'm kind of physically saying.
We try to think that way. Like, you know, we have week without walls trips and trying to do these activities, like, you know, and field trips and tie them into education. But, you know, this feels like we are breaking down those boundaries and those barriers. And it's, I feel like it's just the beginning. I feel like you said it's probably the way education is kind of heading.
I mean, if you had a ship, the Makerspace ship, I'd be on board.
I appreciate it.
Yeah.
I appreciate it.
I'd be walking the plank down there a couple of weeks, I'm sure. Something I'd say. I don't know.
Well, my goal is to have everybody on board, so hopefully I can keep spreading the word.
But remember, it's not a political movement.
No.
Don't talk like that. It's an educational movement. Yeah. Okay, wonderful. Now, we're talking about the second phase, which you're in, the second year, the cross-curricular phase.
Yes.
You mentioned earlier, you just came out of it, because I know you're Mr. Gadget.
Yeah.
You said a current project you're doing is 1960s history, American history, I'm sure.
Yes.
Through your social studies guide.
Yes.
And you are, you're taking them to the makerspace, and you're basically allowing them to make media using digital media and physical media with a poster.
Yes. Yeah, so it sounds a lot more complicated than it is, but
yeah, because you're good at that.
Yeah, I'm good at making things complicated. but basically, the students are creating this cultural museum with different components of the makerspace in it. But the one aspect is they have these little boards. They're called Makey Makeys. They're
okay.
Invented by these really smart guys, smarter than me.
Makey Makey,
just like it sounds. Makey.
Okay, Makey Makey.
And essentially, when you touch something, you have two wires coming out of Makey Makey. When you ground yourself or hold one, and then you touch another wire, you're conducting electricity through your body, and it's mimicking the keyboard keys on your computer.
Okay. So input, basically.
Yeah, an input. So if I want to record Martin Luther King's speech, I just tell the computer when I press A, it's going to play his speech.
Yeah.
And so then I just wire those two wires to my poster. So when I hold the one wire, the ground, or touch something that's conductive.
Touch something on the poster.
Yeah, like a piece of tinfoil. And then I touch maybe Martin Luther's head that has tinfoil on it or something else. I'm making that connection through my body to then activate that A letter key. So the little board activates that A letter key on your keyboard and then plays that sound. So it looks like only all you're doing is touching the poster, but really behind the scenes, you're running through that little Makey Makey, connected to the laptop, pressing the A key, playing the speech.
I see. Okay, but you're not needing to be next to the computer.
You're not needing to be next to it. You're not needing to press A key. You're just touching a physical. And it doesn't have to be tinfoil. It can be a banana. It could be a washer. Anything that conducts electricity. So that's kind of like a little bit more of an advanced activity. My kids also made for that project, they made tie-dye t-shirts. So that's a simple, just going down there, tie-dye from the 60s, you know, hippies and all that stuff.
Yeah.
They went down and actually, you know, wrapped the t-shirts in rubber bands, which we had all this stuff down there.
Yeah.
And then dipped them in clothes dye and it turned out fantastic. And then she ended up making one for me, my wife, and Sawyer, my son. So we have like matching tie-dye shirts now. But they're up posted on the walls. And then she made an Andy Warhol picture of herself on the computer during this kind of digital manipulation and doing kind of the rainbow effect and adding her face multiple times, you know. So she actually did an Andy Warhol style picture of herself.
Wow.
And then she made all these other things. I mean, I could talk a lot, but she did this augmented reality display of Vietnam. So she has you actually hold it out and you can see like the tunnels of Vietnam.
Let's switch off augmented reality a minute, because remember a lot of listeners are still trying to understand the makerspace.
It's a little bit more, maybe
it is a little bit more, but it's fantastic. But what I'm also seeing is here, when you start this movement, not only are you reusing things in the school and you're almost like spring cleaning.
Yeah.
Like things that just were staying stagnant and now coming back in and being very useful.
Sure.
You've got the parent connection. Parents are donating things, stuff like that. They feel like they're helping as well, which they are. The teachers are obviously feeling like empowered now. Wow, we can do this and I don't have to just keep teaching standard.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the biggest thing, which I think that just touches on, is the student. Mm-hmm. The student is just suddenly opened up into... Well, they already are amazingly creative.
Sure.
But here's your tools, and here they should be your tools in the school you're learning in.
Yeah.
To do anything you want, whether it be Warhol or a Vietnam presentation of augmented reality.
Yeah.
And that's come from the student. You haven't told them to do that.
No,
right?
No, this is all. I literally.
So you go, you know, boom.
I was talking to another teacher on Friday, and we were talking about the amount of teacher-led instruction versus kind of the student-driven and motivation in learning. And he's saying, you know, he's a younger teacher. He's like, you know, I think I teach about 60% instruction and about 40% kind of student driven. And I said, yeah, I probably agree with that. You know, maybe a little bit more teacher driven. And I said, well, we're probably now at, you know, I mean, it's kind of crazy to say, but we're probably at 80% student driven and 20% teacher instruction. It's really flips, especially as they get older. And so we're looking at that dynamic and how, and he used the phrase, you know, like the learning is just really happening organically especially as they get older. And so it's really cool to see that the kids that are doing this 1960s museum are seniors, and I literally just give them, you know, here's the requirements for the unit. And you're going to come up with a plan, and there's some guidelines, and you're going to bounce ideas off me, and we're going to check in. but you're just going with it. Now here's, present to me what you want to make. And so they come back with proposals and we tweak them.
Yeah.
And then they just go with it. And then as they're building, you know, I make recommendations, and they always have like some kind of rubric to follow for these projects. But by the end, it's like they did all this learning.
Yeah.
And they still talk about past projects they've done, that they remember stuff that, you know, previously, if I was just to stand up and talk about all these things, you know, the next year, none of them would remember any of this stuff. So it's really cool to see that happen.
Has Makerspace been a catalyst for that?
I think it's just given you the tools to be able to do those things you wanted to do. Like, I think, and it kind of inspires you as a teacher to be, you know, like I said, like, you know, I was kind of feeling a little, I don't know, let's say bored with teaching, but just a little bit uninspired, you know, like, you know, I always want to try new things or get kids excited, and I wasn't feeling that kind of spark. But now that I had the Makerspace, it's like, oh wow, now there's no limits, you know? I don't have to go out searching for these things, or, you know, this learning that I want to happen is going to happen naturally because we have this space. And so I think that's what it is.
Just brilliant. It really is. It really is absolutely fantastic. And Adam, you know, the more I think about it, as teachers, I don't think we teach anything, actually. I think the word teach is wrong.
I think you're right. Yeah.
What I think we do is we allow doorways. We create the confidence to go and walk through that door.
Yeah.
Actually, we don't create doorways. We create that confidence and that feeling stable in an environment and happy to go and find your doors and walk through it. And we support them with that. We follow them. But they're the ones learning themselves. They're the ones teaching themselves. In this digital world, in the age of information, I think that's the way it is. And Makerspace is a perfect analogy of that.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I think you're right. I think we're more like guides and helping. I mean, knowledge is so easy to obtain nowadays with what the students have as tools. And I think that it's just so important to guide them, to show them, like, you know, how to use some of these skills too along the way, which is important that we didn't really talk about earlier, but just some of the basic skills that are, and advanced skills that go into what they learn naturally along the way, you know, collaborating with other students or using these tools or figuring, problem solving, or coming up with new ideas and innovating. So I think those are the things that we're kind of help guiding them towards, instead of so much as the content that we've been so traditionally told that they need to learn.
Guides on the side, not sages on the stage. Sages on the side. Yeah. I tell you what, you've given us the first phase, the exploratory phase, for bringing this movement into your school. You've given us the second, the cross-cultural stage. My God, if that's not enough, listeners, we're going to have to do the third stage.
Oh, wow.
But
that
is for another episode. This is China Jedi, people.
If you enjoy listening to the China Jedi podcast and want to get involved, either by asking a question, expressing your opinion, good or bad, light or dark, or even appearing as a special guest, then get in touch by emailing our team at info@chinajedi.com. That's info@chinajedi.com.
May the smile be with you.